阿弥陀佛，各位菩萨。
Good morning, 阿弥陀佛 ，everyone。
我们距离上一次哈、哦，差不多快一个月嘛。好、哦，上一次有来听新心明的，可以举手一下吗？看一下。
It's about a month since last time we talked about this. Were any of you here last time?
Oh, so
please raise your hand.
只有一个外国人。其他外国人都是第一次的。
So it seems that most English speakers, this is your first time coming to my talk.
好，没关系啊。那我们今天主要呢，要切入到就是信心明的作者，还有呢这个信心明这个字的解释。
It's okay. And today we're going to foremost, focus on the author of Faith in Mind, as well as the meaning of the title.
这个信心明呢，是中国禅宗早期的一个文献，非常早的一个文献哈。
The Faith in Mind it belongs to the earlier days of Chinese Chan.
那我不知道大家对禅宗整个传承哦。认不认识，了不了解
？Are you familiar with the historical aspect of the Chan school？
比如说，你有听过菩提达摩吗
？Have you ever heard of Bodhidharma？
咦，哦，听过哈、哦。那菩提达摩把法传给谁
？Then who did Bodhidharma pass his dharma onto？ To whom？
慧可，哦。
To the second patriarch, 慧可。
就是最有名的就是慧可为了求法就断臂，对吗？把自己的手臂砍断。
The most famous story of 慧可 was he actually cut off his own arm in order to in the process of seeking dharma.
有听过吗？有哈。
Have you heard of the story before?
Yeah, okay. 那慧可问的就是要寻找那颗心嘛，哈。然后后来就找不到心，然后那菩提达摩就说：“那我已经把你的心安了。”这是一个他跟菩提达摩之间的一个故事。
So 慧可 the second patriarch, his one of his most famous story, he was seeking his mind, and he couldn't find his mind, and so Bodhidharma told him.Since you can't find your mind, I have settled your mind already. This is a famous exchange between the two of them.
So, 你相信吗？这个过程。
Do you believe in the story, or what transpired between them?
好，那到底我们不管了哈，反正那个是菩提达摩跟慧可之间的事。
No matter, it's whatever happened between Bodhidharma and Master 慧可。
那中国禅宗很重视传承、哦、所以呢初祖传二祖慧可那慧可传三祖是谁
Chinese Chan highly emphasized the concept of lineage So Bodhidharma passed his dharma on to 慧可 Then who did 慧可 transmit his dharma to? To whom?
You know it? 知道吗会生灿嘛哈、哦、真的答案在上面哈、哦
So、the answer is up there, Sun Chan, the author of Faith in Mind.
那我们看得到的哈，就是这三位哈，就是菩提达摩传慧可，慧可传生灿哈。那生慧可怎么传法给生灿的呢？有没有故事
？So as you can see, their pictures are up here. So Bodhidharma transmitted Dharma to 慧可 then 慧可 transmitted the Dharma to 生灿 Is there any story, famous story between the two of them in the process of transmission? Have you heard of them?
就没有那个慧可跟达摩那么有名了、哦、
It doesn't seem to be as famous as the story between Bodhidharma and 慧可 isn't it?
在佛祖统计哈，就是一个就是禅宗的历史的一本书里面有提到这个故事，那我们可以来听听看。
There's a record of the story between 慧可 and 生灿。
那有就是那个生灿碰到慧可的时候，他还是一个居士，还没出家。 然后他碰到遇到那个慧可，在慧可自己就是隐居的山上碰到慧可，他就说弟子身缠风疾，请师谢罪，就是说我身上哈、哦、有风疾，就是有生病，好、哦，那是不是请师父帮我忏罪哈、哦，忏我的罪，让我能够病可以好这样。
So when Sun Chan first encountered Hui Ke, Sun Chan was at that time still a lay person, and when he upon seeing Hui Ke, Sun Chan said, "Dear Master." I am ill. Is there any way that you can pardon me and help me repent for my illness so that I can fully recover?
那慧可就说，好啊，但是你把你的罪拿出来，我就帮你忏。
So 慧可 answered, sure, I can do that, but you have to first show me your illness, then I can help you, I can pardon it and help you repent for it.
结果僧灿就一直找他的罪，后来跟师父说，跟那个慧可说，觅罪了不可得，就是我找不到我的罪。
So Sun Chan kept looking for this quote unquote illness or transgression, if you will. And after looking for so long, Sun Chan said to 慧可, I can't find it. It's hidden. I cannot find it.
那慧可就跟他说，我已经把你的罪忏好了，那你可以，现在就可以皈依佛法僧。
So 慧可 said,Well, I have eradicated your sin or transgression. I've helped you repent it. So now you are ready to
皈依三宝。
Take refuge. You're ready to take refuge. You're ready to take refuge to the triple jewel.
你有没有觉得这个故事跟前面那个故事很相同，很相似？
Do you feel a similarity between this story and the story between Bodhidharma and 慧可?
Yeah. So, 你觉得到底前面那个是比较真，还是后面那个比较真实? Yeah.
Which one do you think is more real? Is the first one more real or the second one?
还是两个都是假的?
Or perhaps you feel both are false and not real.
Just a story. 只是一个故事。
Perhaps it's just a story.
你们觉得呢?好吧 ,not real, 哦都不相信好 ,just 想象的 ,ok?
So, some people say it might just be imagination.
这个是我想这个是一个公案啊、哦、就是禅宗的典籍里面呢，因为他很重视传承，那传承那也很重视整个传承的过程，所以呢其实越到后面呢，这个传承的过程越来越相同，越来越相似哈、哦。你可以感觉到说，后面的人绝对不会相信这些故事。
So these stories just goes in showing that the Chan school place a lot of importance on the importance of transmission, Dharma transmission. So as time goes on, these stories become more and more similar. So later people begin to doubt the actuality of these stories.
所以其实禅宗禅师的故事、哦、如果禅宗的典籍里面记录那个禅师的故事，那个典籍是比较后期的，比如说是唐朝的禅师，可是如果是宋以后记录他的故事的，通常这些故事呢只能当故事看，不能当史实。
So when you are reading these records and stories of past masters and patriarchs, it really depends on whether it's from the latter time or the earlier times. For those that belongs in the earlier times in history, perhaps we can just take them as stories and they are not meant to be used as historical facts.
所以在新西明讲记，就是圣严师父的这一本里面提到孙灿的生平的时候呢，师父只用了两个文献，一个就是《唐高僧传》，一个就是《楞伽师之记》。
So in Shifu's book, in his commentary of the Faith and Mind, he only had two citations, used two references. The first one is the biographies of eminent monks.
就那两个嘛，你刚刚有讲。
As well as the other record. As well as he used the records of the master of the Lankavatara Sutra.
好， 那所以因为师父是有学术背景出身的，所以他也知道说越靠近这个祖师的文献是越可靠的，所以师父就只用这两个。
Because Master Shen Yan, 师父, he has a substantial amount of academic background, so he understands, he knows that the records that are closer to the patriarchs, those are more reliable.
那我们来看哦，孙灿的生平哦，大概他什么时候生，一般人都没有办法考察得到，大概只能猜到他在606年往生。
So it's hard to trace back and find out exactly when Master Sun Tan was born, but as to when he passed away, the record shows it's around 606 BC, AD.
西元。
西元。
对。对，应该是西元。
AD.
好，那所以在唐高僧传的记录里面呢，没有一个灿僧灿禅师的传记，而是在法冲传，就是这个出家人里面呢，只提到可禅师之后灿禅师，这个可禅师就是指慧可，慧可禅师之后呢传灿禅师，只有这样一句话记录到僧灿。
So in the biographies of the eminent monks, there isn't an extensive description of Master Sun Tan. There was only one line saying, after Chan Master Ke, there was Chan Master Tan. And that's it. That's all that was said about Sun Tan. And over here, Master Ke is referring to patriarch, second patriarch, Hui Ke.
那会用唐高僧传呢，是因为呢，这个传记的作者是唐朝人，然后他写唐初初唐跟初唐以前的出家人的故事。那僧灿是606年左右往生，大概是隋朝的人，所以他算是最靠近僧灿的一个高僧传的一个文献。
And the reason why we are citing biographies of eminent monks is because the author belongs to the Tang Dynasty, the earlier Tang Dynasty, and he was writing stories of these masters in the Sui Dynasty, which immediately precedes Tang Dynasty. So the time lapse between what actually happened as well as the writing of the history is relatively close. That's why we believe it's more reliable.
所以如果说连这么靠近他的那个时代哈，都听不到有关僧灿禅师的生平哦，你就可以知道说宋以后的那些人怎么会知道呢？那就是用想象的了。好。
And so, even for some a text that's written so close to the actual event, there's still so little has been said about 僧灿. So we can use logic to deduce that.For those texts that are written in Song Dynasty or even later on, how could they possibly know so much about Master Sun Tan? So most likely those stories are made up.
那另外一个文献、哦、叫做楞伽师之记，那这一个文献呢里面有提到是僧灿禅师多了几句话、哦、隐于司空山，萧然静坐，不出文迹，密不传法，就是他隐身于司空山这一座山上，然后呢是大多数时间都是打坐的，然后也不出文迹，就是不写任何的著作，那也不传法。
There is another record of Master Sun Tan written in the records of the masters of the Lankavatara Sutra. In that text, there are a few more words said about him, which was It says that upon entering the mountain, Sun Tan never emerged, nor did he ever write about or transmit the Dharma. So basically, it just describes him as someone who had entered the Mount Sikong, and he most of the time he spent there sitting in meditation. He didn't write down anything, nor pass on or teach the Dharma.
那《楞伽师之记》呢？它是在1900年，就是 中国大陆发现了一群，应该算是也不算，就在中国大陆发现了一群的敦煌的遗书，就是遗物，里面有很多的，包括《金刚经》、包括《心经》、包括《六祖坛经》，然后呢，也包括了这一本《圣铁十字记》，就是最早期的一些所有的佛教的资料，这就是所谓的敦煌遗物。
So back in 1900, in China, amidst of the Dunhuang caves, they discovered a set of historical records and artifacts, such as they found a copy of the Har Sutra, as well as a copy of the records of the masters of Lankavatara. So the text emerged around that time.
那楞伽十字记呢，其实也是属于这一批敦煌遗书，可是没有人发现，而是在1926年胡适在这一群敦煌遗书里面呢，发现了这一部是唐静觉禅师所写的一个著作。
So the records of the masters of the Lankavatara Sutra, it was amidst of the artifacts and books that wasrediscovered along with the rest of the stuff in the caves of Dunhuang, but nobody paid attention to it. It wasn't until 1920, there's a great scholar in China called Hu Shi, he rediscovered it, and he noticed that this text was actually written by someone from the Tang Dynasty, Master Jing Jue.
那这里面呢，非常详细的记录了从菩提达摩传到神秀这个过程的所有禅宗早期禅师的生平事迹。
So in this book, there is a really clear record and a lot of stories of the lineage from Bodhidharma all the way to Master 神秀. It's all listed in this particular book.
所以如果我们要知道就是六祖慧能以前禅师的这些禅宗禅师的生平的话，大概我们就是以这两个，比如说续高僧就是高僧传跟楞伽十字记为主。
So if you're interested in finding out more about the stories of these patriarchs and great masters, from Bodhidharma all the way to the sixth patriarch, so the most reliable text that we can use would be these two, which is the biographies of eminent monks, as well as the records of the masters of the Lankavatara Sutra. We can refer to the two of them.
那所以我们就有说哈，师父曾经说，这个楞伽十字记提到的内容呢，有一点可疑，是因为呢，根据隋朝的历史《隋史》里面有记录说，其实僧璨有度了四祖道信，所以并不是密不传法。再来呢，因为他的诗也一直被后代的人一直引用，所以也不算是不出文迹。
So, in 师父's commentary of Faith and Mind, he noted that what the passage in the records of the masters of Lankavatara Sutra, which talks about Sun Chan just sitting in meditations in the mountain and not transmitting Dharma. Shifu said this passage is problematic because according to other historical records, Sun Chan actually transmitted the Dharma to four disciples as well as has written text.That is later often referenced by other Chan masters.
所以我们总结下来哈，前面的一些文献所说的哈，其实孙灿呢，我们还是可以说他是在慧可隐于司空山的时候受到慧可的传法，然后跟着孙灿修行，然后后来呢跟着他的同学也是同期的一起修行的禅师。好，定禅师，他名字叫定禅师，隐居晚公山，然后虽然不从事住世，不公开传法，但是他有传法给道信。那如果说他有传住宿的话，大概就是唯一能够看到的就是信心名这一篇。
So to summarize, basically this is what we know about Sun Chan. He encountered Master Hui Ke while Master Hui Ke was in the mountain Sikong, and he came to study under Master Hui Ke. Later on, he went away with his colleague or fellow Chan Master Ding, and they went into to cultivate quietly in the Mount of Wangong. And then later on, even though the record shows that he wasn't doing explicitly teaching, but he did transmit the Dharma to Daoxin. And as to what he has written, he probably hasn't written that extensively, but we do know that he has written Faith in Mind.
那在楞伽四字记里面最后有说到他是站在一棵大树下往生的。
In the records of Masters of Lankavatara Sutra, it did mention that when he passed away, the way he passed away was standing right next to a tree.
但是我们可以整个来看哈，其实在四祖甚至于在五祖以前的禅师呢，都有个共同点呢，他们都是隐居的。
So there's a common characteristics of most of the Chan masters before the fourth and fifth patriarch. That is, they cultivate in quiet places, or they do it almost like a hermit.
到四祖、五祖以后呢，才有所谓定居在一个地方，然后集众四五百人，然后一起打坐。否则在那之前呢，大概都是禅师一个人在山林里面呢面壁。然后的禅修，那也没有什么传法，也没有什么太多的弟子。
It wasn't until the fourth and fifth patriarch where they start to stay put in one place and then attract a lot of disciples, and then there will be hundreds, four or five hundreds of people coming together to sit in meditation. But before that, before the fourth and fifth patriarch, usually the Chan masters would go into the mountains, sit quietly in a cave, meditate facing the wall of the cave, and they just cultivate this way.
那为什么会这样呢？因为早期禅法传入的时候，大概这个时候，僧灿在处在魏晋南北朝，然后到隋朝这一段时间，那是中国最战乱、最混乱的年代。
Why is that this way? One of the reasons could be that, for instance, at the time of Sun Tzu and even before that, it was a very chaotic time in China. It was between Wei Jing South and Northern dynasties as well as the Sui dynasty. And at that time, it was very turbulent and dangerous.
然后所以呢，他们因为常常战乱呢，所以呢常常要移居不同的地方，然后甚至于呢，有时候因为有不同的人，不就是不同的想法，不一定赞成他们的一个修行方法，而受到排挤。那有时候甚至于会被有生命的危险。所以呢，到最后他们蛮多的这一些，就是早期的这些禅师呢，都是躲起来的。
And because of wars and chaos, they had to travel around a lot. It's hard to settle down in one place. So that's one reason. Also, at that time, there were a lot of people who disagree with the way they teach. The disagreement or controversies could be very forceful, and sometimes it might endanger their very lives. So that's why a lot of the Chan masters went into hiding and cultivate by themselves.
那当然相对于相就是同样的齁，因为一直流动，所以呢他们的故事，他们的状况呢也没有被记录，然后也没有被传送，也没有被就是在当代呢也没有那么的有名齁，所以也没有被记录下来。
And because they had to move around so much, so a lot of the stories or records were either lost or just passed on word by mouth. And because of that, so there wasn't a lot of records of these masters.
另外一个原因呢，因为这些都传承都源自于菩提达摩，那菩提达摩还是处于印度的僧侣，印度僧侣传过来的时候，传过来的禅法呢，基本上修行的方式还是以山林面壁为主的， 传到中国的时候，中国刚刚开始的学的禅法都是这种属于印度的禅法，属于次第而修，就是有次第的修禅定。那要修禅定就要到山林，然后就要一个人在那边就是面壁打坐的修行方法。那因为是这样的一个形式，再加上整个环境的动乱，所以呢其实这一些禅师的记录是很少的。
Another reason is these earlier Chan masters, they're relatively, in terms of time, closer to Bodhidharma. And Bodhidharma came from India. So at that time, the masters and patriarchs that came from India, the method of their practice still tend to focus on sitting quietly in a cave and contemplate and meditate. And so that your cultivation canmake advancement by stages and different levels. So that is the focus, the main method of cultivation. And so because of this, which emphasizes seclusion and solo practice, as well as the factors of the time, the war and the dangers, so the records of these masters were actually very scattered.
但是不论说到底深灿他的故事怎么样哦，然后呢信心明到底是不是深灿做的，但是圣严师父还是觉得说信心明其实对后代的禅宗有很大的影响力。
Regardless of what actually happened to Master 深灿 and regardless whether Faith in Mind was actually authored by Master 深灿， at least 师父 believes thatthe faith in mind is very influential to later thinkings of the Chan school, and it's often cited by a lot of great masters.
就像我们上次提到的，师父有讲到信心明对一个修行者的重要。另外一个呢，是因为如果我们现在到西贝塔，就是电子佛典里面，你打信心明，或者你打信心明的一些句子，比如说第一句自道无难危险简则，它可以有好几百笔的资料出现。
So like we touched upon last time, for a cultivator, the faith in mind is very important and it can be very effective. And also if you try to do a academic kind of research and go to C beta,and you input faith in mind, or if you input the first phrase, the supreme way is not difficult if only you do not pick and choose. Even by entering this phrase, you can see hundreds of citations popping up. So this shows how greatly it has been cited and referenced by scholars and masters.
而且引用的人呢，大概有一半以上呢是禅宗的祖师，但是也有一些呢不是禅门的，他只是解释经教的，但是他还是会引用信心明一些句子。
So those who cited faith in mind, at least more than half of them are great masters in the Chan school. As the other half, even if they are not Chan masters or they are not practitioners, they also cite faith in mind to explicate or to explain some other concepts.
你可以从六祖坛经，就是六祖慧能的六祖坛经的内容也有引用，一直到宋明元都是有人在引用这个的，所以它一直被引用，就可见这个诗记呢是非常流行的。然后有一些句子呢是修行者一定要去思考跟去实践的。
So the faith in mind was also cited. You could see its influence in the Sixth Patriarch Sutra. And furthermore, even continuing on to the dynasties of Song, Ming, and Yuan, it's still often cited and used for teaching. There are also some phrases in the faith in mind that are absolutely critical to cultivators, and these are very important for a practitioner to constantly mulling over.
所以我们可以说，在六祖慧能以前，我们如果说五祖传法给六祖，所以五祖很重要，可是呢四祖呢是建立整个禅宗的丛林，所以四祖也很重要，但是三祖呢就是三祖的文献 就是他的住宿变成呢是整个禅宗要从印度的禅法转换成中国的禅法，它是一个很重要的一个关键时期。
So Master Huinen is one of the most well-known one, and so we often say the sixth patriarch is very important. But in order to have the sixth patriarch, the fifth patriarch is very important because he transmitted Dharma to the sixth patriarch, Huinen. And then the fourth patriarch, he was important in the sense that he created a group of practitioners to practice Chan together. So that was his importance historically. As to the third patriarch, Sun Can, he was important, and especially his writing, Faith in Mind, is important in the sense that it provides a very pivotal link to transform Indian Chan into Chinese Chan. So it occupies a very pivotal place in this transformation.
好，我们这个作者跟这个文献重要就讲到这里，否则你们大概会睡着。
So we'll end it here regarding the author as well as the histories of this text. We'll stop here before you fall asleep and move on to the next subtopic.
但是我们一定要知道他的整个文献的背景哦，我们才会知道说，其实禅宗的范围是很广的，它不是只有六祖慧能以后的文献。
But we do have to have some ideas and know a little about the background of these Chan texts, because it shows us that Chan texts did not just emerge from the sixth patriarch. They also have a historical lineage tracing back to earlier days.
好，接下来呢，我们开始要讲信心明这个。信心明这三个字。
Now we're going to move on to explaining the title, the three characters, Faith in Mind.
那刚我们先解释明这个字。
We'll first focus on the last character, 明, which is inscription.
那明在中文，如果我们望文生义的话，就看那个字，然后要去知道它意思的话，你看到它是一个金字边。好。
By looking at the characters, 明, and you try to understand this character, you can see that it has the gold or metal radical on the side.
就表示它是金属比较硬的东西。
It shows that it's something that's kind of hard, metal or rocks.
所以呢，明原来的意思是说，我们用刀刻在，比如说刻在石头上，或者刻在铜上。或者刻在铁上的一些文字，然后呢，这一个文字是为了要警惕自己，或者是要去赞颂别人的。
So by looking at this character, you know that the text that's categorized as Ming will be something that you engrave in carved into a rock or wood or metal as a way to either as a reminder for oneself or as a way to praise an important person, pay respect to the important person.
就像我们提的警惕自己的，比如说座右铭。那如果是要纪念别人或什么的，就是墓志铭。
And there are different types. For instance, the type that you want to use to give yourself reminders, those could be called maxims, or the ones to memorize and to pay respect to other masters. Those are epitaph.
到现在为止，我们都还用这些，尤其是那些军人往生之后，就是为国捐躯之后，我们就会把这些军人的伟功、丰功伟业都会刻在他的墓碑上。让后人可以知道他的就是可以学习他的榜样。
This practice is carry on to this modern day, and you can see that, for instance, for veterans who passed away, and oftentimes people will write down, it will inscribe what their historical events onto the tomb.
所以信心铭是不是刻在石头上的？
How about faith in mind? Was faith in mind actually inscribed onto a stone?
你猜，是不是在僧参的墓碑后面就刻了这一段这一些文字？
Do you think that faith in mind was inscribed onto Sun Can's tombstone?
因为是名嘛，对不对？不是哈、哦，其实后来名这个字呢，它慢慢演变成一种文体。
It wasn't. Even though it's called Ming, it actually Ming initially started out as something you inscribe onto a metal or onto rock, but gradually it evolves and become a kind of literary genre.
早期还没有所谓的毛笔字，好、哦、印刷术的时候呢，其实中国的文字呢，其实它要流传下来，它是要靠刻的。用刀刻在石头上，刻在铜上，或者是刻，我们都叫做碑文。所以呢，因为你用刀刻哈，它比较费力，也比较难刻。所以我们为了不要花那么多时间，所以呢，不会刻那么多的字，就会非常的精简扼要。然后呢，就是不要花那么多时间，可是又很重要，就刻在上面。所以呢，它的文字是非常精炼、非常简单的。
Before the time of the invention of paper and paintbrush, in order for things to be written down, to be recorded, and to pass on, spread out to other people, back then texts were inscribed onto a rock or wood or stone. And because of by this practice, the act of inscribing them onto a piece of metal or stone is actually very effortful. It requires a lot of energy and a lot of effort. So the text necessarily has to be very concise and articulate and very important for it to be deemed worthy to be put on a piece of metal.
所以在信息名的这个名字呢，它其实是指一种文体。那这个文体呢，是佛教的一个文体，就是说，佛教也运用这个文体哈、哦，就是类似诗的方式哈、哦，写成像佛经里面的寄诵体。
So, the faith in mind was not actually inscribed onto a rock or a piece of metal. It was referring to a type of literary genre. That's similar to poems, a little bit different. And there are similar type of writings in Buddhist texts as well.
啊，佛教就是在佛陀时代哈，印度人其实是喜欢唱歌的，然后他是没有文字历史记录的，所以印度人的历史都是靠口传。那在佛教佛陀那个时代呢，其实要传佛陀所说的法，弟子们也是靠口传。那为了要让这个佛陀所说的法可以很容易传呢，它通常就会变成很简单的文字，然后有印度的那个诗歌的那种韵律，很好唱，好、哦，连那个牧童，就是牧牛的那些童都可以唱出来。那就有这种唱的方式呢，可以把佛经传下去。那刚早期呢，其实都是这种寄诵体。
So at the time of the Buddha, there was not actually written language or written history. A lot of the stories and histories were passed on orally, making it into oral history. And so because of that, a lot, and at that time also, Indian people really favored singing. So a lot of the stories were also passed on through singing. Because of that, so a lot of the texts actually embodies a very beautiful rhythm. To them, which makes it easy to sing or to memorize. Even shepherds or shepherdess that don't know much about Buddhism are able to sing it easily and to pass it on.
所以我们看佛经的时候，通常呢，你会发现说，佛陀讲了一段话之后，他就开始有一个寄诵，好，或者呢，先有寄诵，然后再用一段话来解释那个寄诵，好，这是佛教里面，佛经里面最基本可以看到的这些文体。
So when we read the sutra, we can often see this pattern of the beginning of the sutra. It starts out by having some sort of verses, poems, before moving on into the main body of the text, or in the reverse order, the Buddha will start talking, and in a little while there will be these poems in there. It's a very common practice.That we can see in the sutras.
它目的是为了方便记忆。
And the purpose of it is to make it easier to memorize.
但是因为中文如果翻译成中文或者是自己用寄送体写的话，它就跟中国的诗不太一样的地方就是它没有中国的诗那么严格，一定要押韵，它可能只是字数一样。所以信息名它是四个字四个字四个字四个字，就像诗，可是它又不像诗，每一个字第四个字都要押同样的韵。
But the kind of verses that are often used in Buddhist texts, such as the Faith in Mind, it has this regularities, but it's not as rigid or rigorous as an actual literary poem. In a poem, it requires rhyming and correspondence of the verses. But the Faith in Mind has similar pattern, but it's not as rigorous in that way. The verses are basically four characters, and it follows this pattern throughout. But the words, they don't rhyme with each other necessarily.
当然翻译成英文就没有那个感觉了。
But once it's translated into English, even the regularities of four characters has to be, it's missing.
英文只能解释那一句的意思，这样，就是变成是那个explanation, 就是解释了。
The English translation at best can capture its meaning and it's a way to explain the verses, but it's not able to capture the pattern of the words.
好，这是名的意思哈。那信心这两个字呢，在圣严师父的解释里面呢，就比较特别哈。
So we just describe and explain the point of the meaning of inscription, the third character. And now moving on to the first two characters, 信心. According to Shi Fu's explanation, 信心 actually has quite a different take, different meaning than what we usually think of.
一般我们认为哦，信心就是你学佛一定要信心哦。你没有信心的话，你就不会信佛陀所说的话，你也不信你师父的话。所以你一定要先有信心。所以那个信心好像就是你进入佛法、进入学佛的路里面最基本、你最先要有的，好像它就是一个基础。
The most common explanation of the first two characters, 信心。We often understand it as having faith, having confidence in the method or in the teaching. You need to first have faith or confidence in order to believe in Buddha's teaching and believe in your shifu, your master's teaching. Then you can move on with your practice. That seems to be the most foundational or the prerequisites of practicing Buddha Dharma.
那因为这个原因所以当我这一次周日讲经就说那我就用信心名做标题你海报就打信心名就好了，结果我们监院长华法师就说不行啊，你这个题目不会吸引人，这个信心名谁要来听啊，就每个人都有信心了，然后或者说啊这个看起来就很浅就根本就不会来听了，所以呢就要我写的比较有点深，然后很深，然后让我们的那个常斋法师在写文稿的时候把他写的一个是证悟的境界，然后才有人有信心或者才有人有兴趣来听。
So initially when I was going to start giving the series of talk in the posters we have to make, I suggested just simply put faith in mind and that's it, that's enough, it explains itself. But 常华法师 actually said, no, you can't do it like that. It makes it look too simple. Who would want to listen to such a simple talk? Everybody has faith already. Who would want to come and listen to you talking about it? You have to make it more attractive by making it more difficult to attract audience. And so that's why I had to elaborate a little bit more on the title, Faith in Mind, and make it seem like different stages of practice as well as a final stage of realization that you can attain as a way to get people more interested in coming to the talk.
好，那如果是这样的话，明年我继续上周日讲经，我继续讲信心名的时候，我就可能换另外一个题目，其实我还是讲信心名。
Well, since that's the case, then next year when I give another series of talk, I may actually indeed still focus on the faith in mind, but I'll just simply change the title to make it sound different.
Just a joke, 只是开玩笑的。
Just kidding.
OK, 好，那其实信心这两个字哈，它可深可浅哈，它可以是入门，它也可以是最后达到的境界。在佛法里面呢，它是可以这样去诠释的。
Actually, the character 信心, the meanings of 信心 can be, very introductory, or it can also be very profound. It can be a way to enter the teachings of the Buddha Dharma, but it can also be, your final realization, final attainment, the stage that you're trying to achieve at the end.
那在圣严师父的解释里面呢，信心有两个意思，一个就是信心，相信的心，一个是实现的心。然后在禅宗呢，其实很强调对于心的了解跟对于心的锻炼。
So according to 师父，信心 can actually be, it has two levels of meaning. First one isBelieving in the mind, and the second one is realizing the mind. The mind is especially emphasized in Chan. Faith in mind is the belief that we have a fundamental, unmoving, unchanging mind. This mind is precisely Buddha mind, and it's also Tathagata Garbha, which is the same as the storehouse, the womb of Tathagata in every sentient beings.
他把我后面的都讲出来了。就是禅宗他很强调心，强调对于这个心的认识跟心的锻炼。这个部分好像刚。
Sorry, I went too far. I just finished reading the entire translation. So in any case, Chan school place a lot of emphasis on the mind, and it focuses on how to train the mind.
好，所以在师父来说呢，其实在信心名这个诗记里面呢，最关键的师父的解释就是，整个这个信心名的信心是指说，我们要去相信我们有一个很基本的本来就具足的，然后那个具足的那个心是不动的，不会变的一个心。那我们本来具足的不变不会改变的心呢，就是所谓的佛心，就是具有佛的那种清净无染的那个心，我们本来就具足的。那有另外一个名词就叫做如来藏。
So to believe in the mind means that we have to believe in that we have this mind that is fundamental, unmoving, and unchanging. And this mind is often also called the Buddha mind, which the pure Buddha mind.Another phrase that's commonly used is what you see up there, Tathagata Garbha. It's the storehouse, the womb of Tathagata, which is the Buddha.
那个 Garbha 在藏文，就是在梵文的时候，它是指种子。
In Sanskrit, Garbha actually means the seed.
就是说呢，就是还有呢，这个种子是含藏。我们是含藏在内的，我们有如来的那个种子是含藏在我们内在，就是我们内心里。
It means that the seed of our, we all have this seed of Buddhahood embedded, stored within our mind.
那所以我们要相信说，我们内在呢，其实是可以像佛一样清净，然后没有烦恼的，而且是充满智慧。跟慈悲的这样的一颗心。
So we need to believe in our mind, which contains the seed of similar to the Buddha. It's pure, without vexations, and it has wisdom and compassion, exactly the same as the Buddha's mind.
这重点就是我们要先相信我们有这个。
The key point is we first have to believe that we have this mind.
而且呢，它从来没有改变过。
And in fact, this mind has never changed.
所以它叫一切众生的如来藏。
And that's why we call it, it's a Tathagata Garbha of every sentient beings, this unchanging mind.
那我们有这个信心之后呢， 我们才可能去，我们相信我们有这个心，这个具足佛的性，就是佛心的这个，我们这个种子，就是我们具足这个佛性的话，我们才可能去实现把这个佛的这个心呈现出来。
It's only after we have first believe that we have this mind that's similar to the Buddha's, then we can move on to realize, to try to manifest this mind.
所以师父说这个信心就有两个意思，一个就是你相信，好，你具有这个心，第二个呢是你去实现这个心。
And that's why 师父 said that there are two levels of meaning infaith in mind, 信心. One is to believe that you have this mind that's similar to the Buddha's. Then, the second level is to try to realize the mind.
那就像前一阵子很流行的一个观念，如果你的念头里面你一直相信，一直相信的话呢，然后你一直朝着那个方向的话呢，你就会去实现你相信的东西。
There was a very popular thinking recently that if you firmly believe in something, you keep believing it, and eventually you will realize it.
我忘记那本书叫什么名字了，The Secret, 对，就是那一本，我不知道你们有没有看过。啊，有人去做实验，比如说我相信说我接下来会赚10万，我就一直这样相信，一直相信，然后我一直朝那个目标的话，我就真的赚了10万。
The book that populated the idea is The Secret. I don't know if any of you have read it. So the idea is if you believe that you will earn 100K, and if you keep believing in it and you also act accordingly, then eventually you'll realize that you, and you'll eventually have the 100K.
所以有人说其实这也是运用那个佛教的一些所谓提到的有愿就有力哈。
Some people said that they actually borrow some of the concept from Buddhism, such as if you have the will, then you will have the strength.
但是那个东西会比较会让我们朝向我们的欲望去走。
But the concepts are propagated in The Secret. There's a problem. It tends to focus on the materialistic aspect. It perpetuates our desires.
所以它不是我们佛法里面讲的最终我们实现的那个佛陀的清净的心哦。
So it's not, it doesn't correspond with what we are talking about here, which is our ultimate goal is to actually realize the pure mind that's similar to the Buddha's.
所以其实接下来圣严师父就有说哦，凡夫在烦恼中体验的心其实是妄心，不是真正的所谓的真心哦。
So later on, Shifu has also wrote in the book, the mind experienced by ordinary beings in the midst of vexation is the deluded mind, not the true mind.
也就是说，我们越是想要去寻找可以摆脱烦恼哈，就的方法或者是一个东西的话，你就会去想象到说有一个真心可得，好。
So,what it means is that the more we try to seek to get rid of vexations, or the more we think that externally there's this true mind that can be obtained, none of those is the true mind. The harder it will be to attain the true mind.
意思这句话的意思是什么呢？就是
what does this mean?
就是等于说哈，我刚刚跟你们讲了哈，我们有一个如来藏哈，有一个佛性哈。然后可能我们刚刚就开始想象有一个东西在我的里面、哦、然后我要把那个东西呢呈现出来，类似这样。
For instance, I just told you that we all have Tathagata Garbha. So by hearing this, you might start to imagine, oh, I have this seed inside me. Now I have to try to reveal it and bring it forth. You do this through your imagination.
那所以我们常会呢就是这个不要，我不要烦恼，然后我不要有这些贪啊嗔啊痴啊这些烦恼，那我要去找到说没有贪没有嗔没有痴的那个心，所以就有一个我不要的烦恼跟我要的那个清净的心。
So by doing this kind of thinking, all this imagining, then the result tend to be we start rejecting vexations. We think, oh, I don't want vexations. I want to get rid of my greed, anger, and hatred. Then I have to turn around. I'm seeking this pure mind, the state of pureness. So what happens is that then you start to reject certain phenomena and strive after desiring another set of phenomena.
所以呢，它就有一个有所谓的烦恼跟有所谓的佛性这两种的区别分别。
And by doing so, you're making a drawing a distinction between the so-called vexation and the so-called Buddha mind.
就像刚刚学打坐的人呢。他可能就听到说，哎，我们打坐哈，可以做到最后呢，哎，就是可以整个人非常的清净哦。所以呢，他就会希望说，把这些妄念，然后昏沉呢，先去除掉了之后呢，他就可以达到那个清净的、很安定的那个境界。
For another instance, for people who just begin to practice meditation.They may be attracted to meditation because they hear people say, oh, you can reach a state of calm and peace and purity by sitting meditation. And so, so they will start having that goal in mind. They will start to think, then before I reach that state, I first have to get rid of or resolve my drowsiness, resolve all my bad feelings and all the vexations. Then I can achieve the state of purity and calmness.
结果呢，他就会变成是，当他已经可以做到说腿不会痛了，你不会胡思乱想了，也不会睡着了，然后整个身体没有负担了，然后他就处在那个非常安静、非常祥和的状态的时候，他就觉得啊，这个就是那个清净的状态，清净的心的状态。
So what might happen to these people is once they have attain some result, maybe able to sit quietly, calmly, without drowsiness, not too much wandering thoughts, and sit very comfortably, then they may mistakenly think that, oh, so this is the state of purity and calmness that I'm trying to achieve, and I seem to have gotten it already.
通常做到这种状态的人，他的表情是非常的享受，然后呢，人就一直坐在那里的。这个时候呢，圣严师父通常会拿着香板过来。
So, usually for people who have entered that state, their facial expression will show that they're really enjoying the sit and they can sit there for a very long time. And usually what happens is, seeing someone like that, Master Sheng Yan, Shi Fu, will then raise his incense board and whack these people.
然后就会走，对，就走过来，然后呢，就会一个香板就打下去哈。
So he comes over and without hesitation just whacked.
所以曾经有一个禅众人就被打了哈，然后他就转过来瞪着师父说：“你为什么打我？”这样。
So once there was someone in who participated in in the retreat. This person was hit by the incense board, and he turned around abruptly and stared at Shifu and said, "Why did you whack me?"
我好不容易进入那个状况哦，这个可是很难得才进入的，你结果把我的境界全部打掉了。
It took me so long, so much effort to enter a state like this. Now you just whack me, and everything is scattered.
他不止打掉他的境界哦，还打出他的嗔心。
That hit not only scattered the peaceful state that he was in, it also brought forth anger in that person.
所以他那个状态是真的达到那个清净无染的状态吗？
So did that person actually achieve the state of true purity and no vexation?
所以师父为什么要打他？是要让他起嗔心吗？
Why did 师父 hit him? Did he want to make him angry?
Yeah.就分开 separate So you can use the mic. Yeah, she takes it. Okay.
what I believe it is that it's like a movie.
Mm.
It's not joy. It's not happiness. It's just a, you know, it's, I'm watching a movie. I'm watching my vexations. I'm watching all that is before me, and yet I remain in a state of Buddha mind.
So you think it's just movie?
It's a movie.
It's a, okay. So why 师父要打他就是
So but then why does 师父 want to hit that person?
Because he was joyful and that's not the state. This is not the state. There's no, you know, even Buddha had vexations. Even Buddha had probably had things. Even Buddha had problems. But it's just detachment, not attachment.
Yeah.
To the events.
Okay. 你要翻译吗？就是那不是真正的那个佛的状态，他只是有执着。嗯，不然是什么？
跟他说佛。
哦，佛一佛，哦，没关系，那就 OK。嗯。
他教他可能就是说，你这能说你在那边享受，你一种在冷水泡时，就是说你这个死在当下，就是说你要活在当下，就要觉照的那种心。你虽然在打坐，但是状态是很清楚的。
所以要让师父要让他知道这样。
So one explanation proposed is that it's similar to the famous phrase, it's a rock soaking in cold water. And so Shifu had to whack that person so that he become ready to raise his awareness. He's not just soaking there.
其实在那个书里面呢，师父说，其实我只是要知道他在干嘛。
Actually, in the book, Shifu wrote, all I wanted to do is to know what he's doing.That's why I whacked him.
然后看他有什么反应这样子。
I was just curious what kind of reaction he would have.
所以其实有的时候呢，我们其实不知道你们坐在那边干嘛的。
So oftentimes, from our perspective, we don't really know what's happening in your head when you're sitting there.
我们就去试一下，看你的反应就知道你在干嘛。
That's why we have to poke you a little bit so to find out what's going on.
所以其实呢，从这个反应里面，其实我们知道说，其实我们人在用功或者在用一个方法或者有一些观念的时候，我们就会有一个想象，然后我们就会朝我们的想象去让自己去实现我们那个想象，结果呢，我们从这个想象其实进入到另外一个想象，都不是真的。
So this is an example. This example shows that oftentimes when we get a new idea, we have some sort of concept or have a goal they want to achieve, then we start to imagine the goal or what the state, and then we start practicing to approximate and get closer and closer to that goal, eventually achieving that goal. The problem is you are just merely movingfrom one imagination to the next imagination, and none of it is real.
那我举一个例子，前几天我昨天才从旧金山回来哈，然后我这次去旧金山是第二次，那第一次的时候呢很热，然后他们说旧金山是沙漠型气候，所以呢它像沙漠一样很热。
Let me give you another example. I just came back from San Francisco yesterday, and this was my second time visiting San Francisco.The first time I was there, it was really hot, and they explained to me that San Francisco has the desert climate, and that's why it can become very hot.
所以这一次我们搭飞机的时候呢，经过那个就是从纽约去旧金山的时候，然后快到旧金山之前，下面都是黄色的一片山，然后就跟旁边的法师说，你看，下面都是沙漠，因为它是沙漠型气候。
And that's why when we were flying to San Francisco on our way, when we were approaching San Francisco, we looked down and we see a lot of mountains, and the mountains were actually kind of barren. It's all brown and yellow. And so I said to another Fasha next to me, look, it's all desert down there because San Francisco has desert climate.
结果我们到山到了旧金山之后呢，那个菩萨跟我们说，没有，因为旧金山最近干旱很严重，已经两年没有下雨了，所以那些山本来是绿色的，那个叫山，本来绿色，因为没有水，所以全部都变成黄色，看起来像沙漠。
But once we arrived, the person who were there to get us actually said that's not the case. It's all brown and yellow down there because San Francisco has been under drought for 2 years. It hasn't rained enough. And so originally those mountains are supposed to be green, and that's the way it's supposed to look, not because they're deserts.
所以其实呢，我看到的那些呢是山，不是沙漠。
So what I actually saw was mountains, dried up mountains. They're not deserts.
就是意思是说，我第一次去的时候，我留下的印象就是想象就是有沙漠。所以我一看到的时候，我就把我想象的套上去。结果呢，事实上不是我想象的，它是沙漠。这样。
So what does this mean? It just means that the first time I was there, I got this concept or this image of it being a desert, and so I held on to this preconception and then apply it to whatever I saw. It wasn't really desert, but because of my preconception, I believe that it's desert.
那就是像刚刚说的哈，我们从一个想象哦，就又进到就发现说前面的是一个想象，但是呢，我就以为说哦好，这些都是山，然后呢，因为没有下雨，没有水。结果呢，我的印象里面就是旧金山就没有水咯，就前后面几天呢，他们带我去一个公园，结果我看到三个湖充满了水，我就说旧金山不是没有水吗？为什么又有湖全部都是水？
And because of the second explanation where it's in under a drought, so I then had conjured up this image of it's very dry in San Francisco, they don't have enough water. Toward the end of my visit, they took me to a park, and at that park, there were actually three lakes full of water. So I turned around and asked people, what's all this water doing here? Don't you have a drought? Where did all this water came from?
所以其实呢，我从第一年的沙漠的那个想象，那个概念里面呢，结果我这一次去呢，我就打破了那个沙漠的概念，然后我就进入另外一个概念里面，我认为它就是干旱而已，然后它没有沙漠，但是它没有水。结果呢，我看到水的时候，我发现我认为的没有水，又是一个自己的想象。其实我们会从这样的一个里面呢，又转成这样，其实我们以为我们转成的是对的，结果实际上呢，它还是错的。
So basically, from my first visit, I had this imagined concept of San Francisco being desert. Then on my second visit, I was told that no, it's not desert, it's just drought, no rain. And so the first concept was shattered, and then I move on to the second concept, believing that it's the truth. And then at the park, seeing all the water, that second concept was shattered again. So this is the way we work. We move from one concept or one imagined concept to the next, believing that the newer one is actually the truth.
其实我们可以在生活中去观察自己的心念哦，其实很容易就掉到这样的一个状态。
We can actually observe the way our mind works on a daily basis, and we can clearly see that our mind follows this pattern continuously.
一样的，我们在禅修的时候呢，我们也很容易掉到这样的状态。
Similarly, when we are practicing meditation, we can follow this pattern as well.
就像我们刚开始就是打坐进入到整个身体不见的时候呢，你会非常的开心哦。然后你就会认为说，哇哇哇哇，我进到哪一个状态了哈？然后等到你修行到某个阶段，再进一步的时候，你会发现呢，啊，那个叫做 kindergarten， 就是小幼稚园的阶段而已哈。前面的那个呢，只是一个过程。然后你在进入到一个更安定的状态的时候，我们就会认为说，哇，这又是另外一个境界哈。然后好像快要接近什么的样子，实际上呢，你在用功的时候，你会发现啊，前面那个也只是 骗我们的那个阶段哦，它会有一层一层一层一层，然后你一直验证说前面的是假的，前面的是假的，前面的是假的。
It's just like when we are practicing meditation, once you enter the state of the body disappearing, you may become very excited, thinking, whoa, I've entered, this is really cool that I entered a certain stage. This must mean that I've obtained XYZ. It's not until you move on to the next stage where you become even more settled and more quiet and peaceful, then you realize, oh, what I just experienced is merely kindergarten level. It doesn't mean much. So meditation moves ahead, advances like that, level by level, layer by layer. And then it's not until you move on to the next stage that you realize that it's all just a process. And you realize that whatever you experienced and you were excited about in the previous stage, it's just part of the process. And that's all.
不过这是禅修最吸引人的地方，就会让你呢不断地去探索新的一个状态，而且呢会不断地让我们去放掉你任何的经验。
And that's why meditation is so attractive and it's so fascinating. It invites us to continuously explore new levels and new frontiers. At the same time, it's teaching us to let go of whatever we have just experienced or our preconceptions.
因为最终我们的那个所谓的空性的佛的那个智慧是还没有展现的，所以我们其实这个过程里面呢，我们也要相信说，就是它这些都是过程，但是呢未来还有一个，就是说我们还是要继续不断的去努力，然后让那个佛的智慧的光明呢是自然的呈现出来的。
So even in this process we have to know that these is all just different stages, different manifestations. The final, the Buddha nature, it hasn't revealed itself yet. It's something still to work toward. It's something very important to keep in mind.
所以到最后师父有提到说，你其实你从佛的观点来说呢，只有一心，可是这个心呢也不是真也不是妄，那就是我们自己去体证到的。
And that's why 师父wrote, from the perspective of the Buddha, there's only one mind, and this mind is actually neither true nor false.
就是没有任何的分别。
There's no distinction between the two.
好，那这个解释相信，就是信心这两个字哈。
So this explains the characters of 信心。
那接下来呢？心性明它的内容齁，其实非常的丰富齁。如果我们去看到它内容里面呢，有一些就懂中文的啦齁，它里面有一些用词齁是很特别的。那比如说它会用到逍遥，用到太虚齁，然后会用到一些属于道家老庄的语言齁，它这个是用词这个部分。
So, moving on to the text. The text of the faith and mind is actually very, very rich. And for those of you who are able to read Chinese characters, you will see that the language is fascinating. And it actually used words such as xiaoyao, liberation, as well as taixu, the vast emptiness, to describe a lot of the states.
那还有另外一个呢，就是从心性明的整个顺序来看呢，就心性明前面呢都是在讲分别善恶顺逆、哦、都是一些有的一个状态，然后呢也有说你要从散乱的心，然后慢慢的用功到你的心达到统一，最后你可以证得真如，你可以感觉到它那个整个内容它是有一个次第的修行过程。
So also as you read the text you will get a sense of progression. First talks about good and evil, what goes accordingly and goes against one's wishes. These are all descriptions of phenomenon of existence. And then it moves on to talk about how to train the mind from the state of scatteredness to one-mindedness and eventually reaching the state of the true mind.
那这是有原因的哈，就是说一个文献哈，它呈现出来的东西其实跟它整个大的时空环境背景有关。那所以信息名的整个时代背景呢，其实呢，我们从这个时间表来看呢，你可以看得到的就是说，其实呢，它跨了生产呢，大概跨了这一个阶段的部分哈。
So you can actually relate to this progression with the historical background of when this was written. So the Faith in Mind was actually written around the time of Sui Dynasty, the one that's in the box.
魏晋。
South and North Dynasty as well as the Sui Dynasty.
这就是我们刚刚提到的，就是在一个魏晋南北朝，然后进入隋朝，很短的隋朝时期里面，就是一个比较动乱的时代。
As we've mentioned earlier, the Wei Jing dynasties as well as the Sui dynasty was a time of chaos and it was very turbulent with a lot of wars.
可是战争它有一个好处，就是在中国的战争里面呢，它就是战争的结果呢，人是会流动的，然后呢没有国界之分，所以中国周围的那一些西域的那些国家全部进入到中国来。
But there is one benefit of wars is during wars, people move around a lot, so the boundaries between countries get obliterated, and a lot of tribes or countries, people from the west, the foreign countries actually start to go into the main part of China.
如果知道中国历史的话，你会知道说后汉就是东汉以后哈，就进入三国，然后五胡乱华，然后到南北朝。这个过程里面呢，每一个朝代呢大概都很短，或者是同时有好多个国家，那些国家很多都是胡族，就是羌啊、胡啊这一些所谓的，我们中国人都用那种不好的词来形容这些外国人，都是外国人进来然后占领中国。
So, if you know something about the Chinese history, you can see that starting from the latter part of Han Dynasty, it moves on to the dynasty of the three states, also the Jing Dynasty, the 16th State Dynasty, etc. And so this time, again, it's very turbulent. There were a lot of wars, and a lot of the Western tribes, oftentimes in the history, they are often talked about using derogatory terms, but basically it's foreigners or Westerners coming into the main part of the China.
那就包括那些西域的，还有从印度，然后呢我们叫尼泊尔，还有那些地方我们叫做整个丝路呢就非常的频繁，所以呢从印度然后到西域的这一些外国的出家人就骑着骆驼啦，或者什么，就带着背着经典啊，就这样横越沙漠，然后进入到中国，然后把佛教的经典就这样传到中国来。所以在魏晋南北朝这个时候呢，的佛教是初传，所以大多数都是属于翻译的，是属于佛教里面的翻译时期，就是翻译了非常多的从西域进来的佛经。
So at that time, a lot of the masters and monks from India, from Nepal, from those countries, following the movement of the people and the war, they gradually, perhaps riding on their camels or whatnot, come into China. And on the camel's back, they bring with them the sutras and a lot of the teachings from India and Nepal. That's how these texts got brought into China. And at that phase of history, it's a time where Buddhist teaching is in a stage of translation. A lot of texts are being translated from foreign language into Chinese. It's a beginning, initial stage of Dharma transmission.
所以我们稍微看一下，那个时候的思想，因为是战乱，然后呢东汉就是汉以来非常兴盛的儒家思想已经开始呢 不被中国人接受，因为呢，就是因为儒家思想，所以呢，国破家亡。
And because of all these wars, we can also see how the way people think has changed. So before the Han Dynasty, what was really popular was the Confucius thought. But because of all these wars, the people start to reject Confucius thinking and believing that it's because of what you have taught. You know, we follow all these rules and regulations. That's why we're in such a state of chaos.
所以很多人对于国家、对于整个的局势非常的失望，所以呢就开始远离，然后呢会隐遁山林。所以那个时候呢开始流行老庄玄学。所谓玄学就是隐居山林，然后呢过着那种道家的那种山林修道，然后就是那种逍遥自在的日子。
And because so many people became disappointed and disheartened by what's going on in the country, they welcome and start to adopt a different set of thinking, such as the Zhuangzi, or the Taoist ways of thinking. And so they hide into the mountains and start practicing those teachings and start practicing mysticism.
佛教这个时候传进来是刚刚好的。
So that was a perfect timing for Buddhism to enter the country.
因为中国人那个时候都不想政治，都讨厌政治。
Because Chinese people at that time they dislike politics and they don't want to talk about it.
很想要自由，然后想要亲近大自然，然后喜欢整个大自然的那种空，就是那种无为的那种境界哈。
So they were aspire to greater liberation and to nature and to the openness of nature.
所以这个思想呢，其实呢，跟佛教最根本的思想很相似。
So there's a lot of similarity between this way of thinking and what the fundamental concepts in Buddhism.
所以这个时候呢，我们叫做佛法传进来之后呢，因为它传的是这一些思想哦。那但是有一些就不太就是我们要从西域的语言就是那种梵文啊巴利文啊要能够让中国人的汉语了解，这中间的桥梁很难。所以那个时候有所谓的佛教格义化，就是说我们要翻译的话我要讲这个空空跟你们中国的什么有关呢啊，就是你们道家的那个无为咯啊，你们道家讲的那个空哦，或者是太虚哦，他说哦，原来你讲的是这个，那我懂了。他就会用道家的语言呢，来去套佛教的一些境界跟术语。
There are a lot of fundamental concepts in Buddhism that's deeply related, integrated to Indian philosophy, and it's hard to sometimes translate it directly into Chinese.So in this process, they actually had to create bridges to bridge the concepts. So if the translator is trying to introduce certain Indian or Buddhist concept, they have to sometimes think about, is there anything that sort of correspond to what we're talking about in your existing belief system? Perhaps the Buddhist concept of emptiness, sunyata, is a little bit similar to the Tao's thinking of Wu Wei or to the great emptiness. So they make the bridge, they connect this concept this way. So during that period of time, a lot of the concepts were introduced into the Chinese system by making the link between Indian philosophy and Buddhist philosophy with existing Taoist philosophy.
举一个例子哈，你们比较容易了解。就是美国不是有肯德基 fried chicken 是不是有吗齁
Let me try to explain this so it's easier to understand. Let me give you an example. So there's KFC in the US, right?
然后传到马来西亚的时候齁，这个其实以麦当劳跟肯德基来说呢，肯德基是在马来西亚是比较红的。
So when it was first introduced in Malaysia, at that time, McDonald's and KFC was in competition. But in Malaysia, KFC actually became more popular.
Do you know why? 因为呢，马来人呢，其实很喜欢他们自己本身就吃炸鸡。
And that's because Malaysian people favors fried chickens in their own culture as well.
但是他们炸鸡呢，会放 curry.
But they put curry in their fried chicken.
所以肯德基传到马来西亚的时候，为了让马来人更能够接受肯德基，所以呢，他们马来西亚的肯德基比较不一样，他就可能就会加 curry.
So in order to introduce KFC to Malaysia and to make it more similar to what people are used to, so KFC in Malaysia added curry.
所以其实对于马来人来说呢，这个肯德基跟他马来西亚马来人的炸鸡其实没有什么差别，他就可以接受了。
So to Malaysian people, there's very little difference between KFC fried chicken versus their original type of fried chicken. It becomes very easy to accept.
所以你如果去下一次你去马来西亚，你就特别去看 KFC 里面大多数都是马来人。
So when you go to Malaysia next time, you can go into KFC and you can see that there are actually a lot of native Malaysian people inside KFC.
不是 Malaysian people, 是 Malay people.
Malay people.
Yeah, it's different.就是 我们是算 Chinese, 他们是 Malay. 不同。
So there are a lot of Malay in KFC in Malaysia.
对，所以 KFC 在马来西亚是非常的成功的。
So KFC is actually very successful in Malaysia.
这个只是举例子啦，这跟佛教吃素好像不太相应。
This is just an example. It doesn't really correspond with what we promote, vegetarianism here, but it illustrates my point.
你要行销一个东西的时候，你绝对要跟它一样的时候，你要用当地的东西来让它觉得 similar, 跟 一模一样，它就可以接受。
I'm just trying to illustrate that when you're marketing something, you have to make it comparable to what they have originally, so it becomes easier for people to accept.
佛教传到中国的时候，那个时候就是在做这件事情。
So that's what Buddhism was actually doing. That the changes that it went through and it's being introduced to China, that was the process that took place.
当然，我不是说 KFC 了哈。
Not KFC, Buddha Dharma. We're still focusing.
OK, 所以你可以了解所谓格义化的一个过程哦。然后那个时候最流行的整个佛教，就是整个中国的思想最流行的就是道家。所以呢，佛教就跟道家就这样结合。
And because at that time, the most popular types of thinking, school of thinking in China at that time was Taoism, and that's why when Buddhism was first introduced to China, it integrated and combined with in Taoism or borrowed a lot of the Taoist terms.
那后来呢，因为大家越来越可以接受佛教了。所以呢，其实慢慢的，他们就开始可以理解佛教，然后慢慢就会用汉语来去诠释，然后慢慢就把道家的语言呢慢慢淡化，就比较没有了。
As it becomes more mature and more widely accepted by people, and as people become, their understanding of Buddha Dharma grows, then gradually.People are able to capture a lot of the concept using Chinese language itself, and gradually the Taoist term that was borrowed initially went away.
好，那接下来其实中国传入，就是佛教传入中国哈，其实刚开始是零零星星的经典，没有次序的。可是到了大概这个年代的时候呢，开始传蛮多的般若中观的思想。那这里面有关键的人物呢，就是鸠摩罗什。
In the beginning days, when the Buddha Dharma was first introduced to China, the sutras that was brought in, they were kind of scattered and not very systematic. But gradually, around the time that we're talking about, it becomes more systematized. So a lot of the Prajna schools, Madhyamika school types of thinking,sutras related to that school got introduced into China. And this is greatly due to an important translator, Kuma Rajiva.
就那个强调空的思想。
And these schools of thought emphasize the concept of emptiness.
那因为时间的关系哈，这个部分呢我们就留到下一周哈我们再讲，然后其实它挺有趣的，那欢迎哈大家下一周呢来了解一下这个从这个佛教怎么样慢慢传到中国整个思想的演变，然后这个演变呢其实对新兴民有造成很大的影响。
So because of time, we will talk more about this, elaborate on them next time. So I welcome all of you to come back and we will pick up where we left off today. To talk about the historical perspective of where the faith and mind came from, I mean, it actually has a lot of influence onto the text itself.
So see you next week.
See you next week.
Okay.